Hey y'all, welcome to Back to the Basket, a weekly podcast where myself and American, Wahaj, talk to two other Canadians, Kevin and Richard, about something we love and something we share. It's the NBA. Today's Monday, February the 19th, and it's Happy President's Day, guys. Or, locally, Happy Family Day. What's going on, folks?
We're doing good. It's a holiday, you know, after the All-Star break.
Misty afternoon here in beautiful Scarborough.
So, All-Star weekend just happened, and it ended.
Yes.
Any initial thoughts?
I like that people cared about showing up for the competitions. I was really happy that Devin Booker showed up with no chill in the 3-point contest and just torched everybody, and Spencer Dinwiddie showed up and torched everyone in the skills competition. That was pretty fun.
It was good. I mean, All-Star Saturday, I think they could have done it a little better in terms of execution, but All-Star Sunday's game, I think, was probably one of the best ones in the last few years.
Mm-hmm, those double traps.
Double traps set by Dwayne Casey there, you know, really utilizing Kevin Durant and LeBron to the fullest.
Let me ask you guys, any highlights? Anything that stands out?
I really think, Donovan Mitchell did really well in the dunk-off, but I still think the best dunk of that competition went to Dennis Smith Jr. Reverse 360 through the legs, finished with the left hand. I really think he got snubbed for the finals, but how about you?
Usually I don't have a blast watching Kyrie Irving play nowadays because he's on the Celtics, but I had a blast watching him slither through defenders during the main All-Star game, especially in the third quarter. He just went nuts.
It's a Kyrie love. Always some Kyrie love.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like the dunk, I mean, Dennis Smith Jr.'s dunk was something I haven't seen before.
Unreal.
Like, I've seen a bunch of dunk contests. I mean, granted, I'm only 27, so I can't date myself that back. But I feel like that switch, you know, was just unreal. I also think that Donovan Mitchell, you know, didn't really do Vince Carter the justice that he deserved. Even though, I granted, he's much shorter, not the same wingspan. But I feel like if you're going to do a sacred dunk, it's got to be on point. And when you say it's over, like, even Kenny Smith
over.
Was...
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to say it.
Yeah. And bear in mind, he also is not half amazing.
Like, that's very true. Nobody is. Nobody's half amazing. Do you think Vince Carter can still pull that dunk off?
I wouldn't doubt him, honestly. I've seen a lot.
Yeah, there's lots of
the
clips in the... There's lots of clips of him in warm-ups, just like, you know...
When is the next time Utah plays Sacramento? That's the game I want to see. I want to see Mitchell do that right in front of his face, and Vince Carter go like, no. Let me bring out my 41-year-old butt and show you exactly how it's done. That'll be the first Sacramento game I've seen this season. No lie. Sorry. Kings fans.
I used to watch more Kings games, but then they waived.
Nobody's listening to this in Sacramento, right?
Papa Giannis.
that was the move.
Yeah, that was the move.
That was the cutoff point.
Vladdy waived Papa Giannis. And,
oh no!
And it was over for me. The boogie era was officially over.
So, do we have any other pointers from the All Stars that you want to bring up? Oh, you know what? That reminds me. I got to talk about Klay Thompson. Do you think he was pissed that he lost again?
I'm certain he was pissed.
Yeah, he looks like the kind of dude that, like, takes it really seriously. Like, he'll keep competing until he wins it.
I just recently heard on the Woj podcast with Klay that he's a very sore loser, and he's only now getting better at it. And you saw from the finals a couple years ago how salty he could be about losing. So, you know, that's a good point that you brought up. He may have definitely been really mad that he lost that.
I mean, but Devin Booker went on a crazy run, though. Like, that, the shots he was hitting was just... I don't think Klay imagined that. I think Klay was like, you know what? I kind of have an open playing field here. Like, I'm going to win this. And Steph is not in the competition anyway, so Klay always feels, like, a little bit better when Steph's not there.
But how about the record-setting performance of Devin Booker in the Moneyball era, where 28 points on, you know, 25 possible balls?
Was that the highest ever?
Highest ever in Moneyball era.
I did not know it was the highest ever.
Yep. First, the last two are held by Steph and Klay in their respective winning years. I think it was 17 and 16.
Wow.
And Devin Booker, new record, 28.
There you go. Devin Booker. Yeah, Devin Booker's something else, but I don't...
He's special.
He did drop 70. I mean, we forget about that game because I think, were they like letting him?
Well, it was the same thing that they did in Wilt's, like allegedly what they did in Wilt's 100-point game where they fouled to get more possessions.
And they fed him the ball.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But, you know, at the end of the game where they had the picture held up where it said 70, the team was holding it with Devin Booker, and Jay Crowder commented on the Instagram post, said something along the lines of, how was that? How was the loss? And Devin Booker responded, you can't guard me.
I feel like every NBA player says, you can't guard me. And that's probably
especially
the truth.
Especially the Jay Crowder,
yeah.
But why is it that Jay Crowder and IT always have to say something?
Well,
I feel like they're always in the middle of
something. That's why they got shipped.
Yeah, it's also part of their personality. There are a bunch of guys who are like that.
So, like, are you okay with them chiming on Instagram? Like, that's a recent trend now, like where you see like athletes liking things. And so, commenting on...
He's more than a role player. Hashtag that.
Well, Quinn Snyder definitely liked him. Apparently they wanted him for a while. So, like, he fits in that system.
He does. I think some players do it better. Like, I certainly think... Like, I'm more about, like, in-your-face trash talk on social media. Like, Embiid is, like, obviously the obvious pick for, like, best trash talker in the NBA.
How good was the Embiid and Westbrook again last night? Or like
that was amazing.
That was amazing, right? Like when they went at it.
Oh
like,
yeah, no, they were really
they really don't like each other, yeah. Which I love.
I think that's real.
Block Embiid had on Westbrook, insane.
Yeah. Well, Westbrook can't even tell him to go home because I mean I guess he can because he's in LA, so he can go home.
Yeah.
But I think that was a really funny tidbit when Embiid was like, "I am home, man."
Yeah.
Like. Westbrook just likes to talk and he likes to get himself going, but sometimes it's like, come on, Westbrook. Like,
there's no off switch on Russell, so... I mean,
you think so?
No, he comes in 125% every day, ready to go.
Yeah.
I feel like he needs to channel some of that if he needs to win a title. I'm just going to put that out there.
Ooh, shots fired.
Sorry, Westbrook. Still a lot of love for Westbrook.
You know, Westbrook, 30, 10, and 10 last year, and where do they end up? You know?
I mean... I would feel like they overachieved in some ways.
Yeah.
So, I mean, cool. I don't know if I exactly agree with it, but I know what you're saying. I feel like Westbrook did take advantage of like, hey, why is he still playing? You know, they're up by 20 with 4 minutes to go. I saw a lot of that happening, and I feel like because of that, people were like, well, you know what? He can sit out the fourth quarter, but I don't know. I think Westbrook just wanted to go for something, and the coach was like, I mean, I don't have a lot of trust in Billy Donovan. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of sets. Like, I just don't trust him.
I like Billy Donovan.
He did great in Florida.
Yeah, as a college coach.
I mean, he did great in Florida. It doesn't always translate into the NBA. You know, Brad Stevens gets a lot of credit for breathing.
Well, Richard likes him, so.
Yeah, I like what he did with OKC's defense in that series where they almost took the Warriors.
That was a good one.
Yeah, they just really figuring out... I think that was like the first time we really saw how athletic that team can be on defense. And like that was like... We were already going into it, but that was like the ascent of Steven Adams into like this kind of like wonder role player that he is now.
I agree. I also think Billy Donovan does great with bigs. Like in Florida, he won the NCAA championship with Joakim Noah, and he always had about two bigs in his rotations, defensive schemes. So he exploited the Warriors in that series and the fact that they didn't really have a big. And you know, having Adams and Kanter on the boards can really really help your team.
Okay, going back to the All-Star game, something that's actually been bugging me lately, and I know a lot of people are interested in this topic, it's the level of broadcast commentary in the league. I think a lot of people have started to take issue with it, and it's something I'd like to discuss with all of you. Two situations specifically, Players Only and Marv Albert.
Players Only, baby. Is that copyright?
I hate both of those things that you just mentioned, but I can really? I'll tell you why. I mean, Marv Albert... How many times has he called somebody, you know, by another player's name?
Or the wrong amount of fouls, or even the wrong, like, attempted
There's a clip
to
of
score.
Him. Yeah, there's are a clip you, of
are
him.
Are you all slandering Marv Albert right now? Like, is this really happening? Like, do you think he should hang it up now?
I think there are far more qualified people, but there are also people who do rambling much better than he does.
Okay, so are you a fan of play-by-play, Richard? Like, you want it to be, like, just stick to what's going on in the game, not too much commentary?
Well,
like,
I grew up listening to hockey and grew up listening to basketball.
That voice, though, man.
Yeah, it's a legendary...
God damn.
It's a legendary voice, but after a while... There's a certain level of broadcast integrity that you need to have, which I think we're losing. Switching to the one I did want to talk about, which is players only, I think they bring a lot of credibility, but something that's been bugging me about commentary recently is that they just don't watch the games.
Oh, you think the
right.
research is
and
not...
analytical side, you know, they don't have to, right? But as a broadcaster, they should. Sir Charles Barkley just came out recently saying that he's only watched 2 games this month.
He also said he was drunk during an NBA game. So, I mean, Charles has been saying a lot of things lately.
Yeah.
He needs to get him on. He needs to get him on, like, late night shows, Mueller, because I think he'll reveal a bunch of things. Is that the grill? 3D. Grill marks.
3D.
So, I think...
Grill marks.
I'm not going to sit here and let you guys slander Marv Albert. Nostalgia is a thing, guys. Come on.
You know what? The quality of my broadcast is affected... When Marv Albert is
the average working man retires at around what 65 years old. Marv Albert is now 76, and
man, who remembers Bob Costas? Jesus, I was like 4 years old. I don't even remember this that much, but there's a video of me watching the NBA Finals, and Houston Rockets were in it, and I'm from Houston, so it was a big deal when I was growing up, and. OJ was on the run at that time. So while the NBA Finals were going on, like, they show Bob Costas just saying, like, hey, OJ's on the run. And then they pan to the Bronco.
Yeah.
Man, that was, I don't know. I have a lot of nostalgia when it comes to the NBA. So I'm going to stick to Marv as my pick. So we were talking about this earlier, off the record, about how the NBA is changing a lot of things. And it's a very progressive league. We can all agree on that. Mm. I think compared to the NFL and even the MLB, like you see all these issues happening. But I think our commissioner listens to LeBron and Chris Paul. Like, there's only 2 guys that he listens to.
Right. Yeah.
So I feel like Chris Paul is the one that gave him a call last year and said, hey, let's change up the All-Star game.
Oh, yeah,
and here we are with a different format, a breath of fresh air into the All-Star game. And we're all happy that we're sitting here because last year it was abysmal just watching that game.
Oh, yeah. No, last year they basically just fed the ball to AD because it was his town. And they were like, oh, AD should win something since they're
Steph
not.
Steph Curry
wow,
literally
that is the
laid
saddest thing I've ever heard.
It's true.
AD should win something. I feel like somebody should say that to his face. Like, AD, you won something.
Well,
man.
That's what they did. They were like, oh, let me feed AD the ball real quick and get you an MVP. Like.
So, is there something that stands out for you guys when it comes to the progression of NBA and how they've taken all these moves to make the NBA better moving forward?
VR.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's... Okay.
Yeah.
VR
Elaborate.
Is a big movement by, you know, Adam Silver. So, basically, courtside is the greatest way to enjoy any sporting event, according to the NBA. And, I've never sat courtside, but you know I've always wanted to. It seems like a great.
Can we make that happen? Can we sit courtside?
let's make it happen.
Let's get a sponsor.
Mattress
first.
Firm,
Jesus.
We're looking at you.
Okay. I don't think we should be calling
out
sponsors.
I don't know if
we're
getting shown for that.
That's definitely not a way to get sponsors. Yeah.
Mike, we can edit that one out.
But yeah, so I believe it's in conjunction with League Pass, which has its own issues, but is still quite wonderful. You can. You know, if you have like a Samsung, any smartphone or system that supports VR, you can just strap on the headset and you can feel like you're getting dunked on by LeBron.
I can feel like Andre Drummond again.
Yeah, true.
I want to work on my free throws.
I don't ever want to feel like Brandon Knight.
He's improved. He's
yeah. No,
he's
I'm not. There. I'm not taking anything away from him. I know there's a ton of Andre Drummond fans in this room, but God forbid Marv Albert. I defend.
No, I will.
Hey, his free throws are what in the 70s now? Good job.
They're higher than Jaylen Brown's. That's for sure.
Wow. Celtics, no Celtic love in this room ever.
I'm sorry. Ever. They get a lot of love.
Oh, like, okay, so Kyrie gets some love. Okay, I understand. Jalen's a good player. Let me just put that out there. 58%
free throws.
So we're talking about progression in the NBA. And is there anything you guys have noticed in the past couple of years that NBA has really taken a strong hold on when it comes to change, per se?
I think that the thing that's really controversial right now, especially with the NBPA, is one and done. And what I think the league has done to better itself in terms of player development has always been interesting. Like how Summer League suddenly became this thing, and then the G League became this, or the then D League, now G League became a thing, and that extends to two-way contracts.
Oh. Well, that's an interesting topic, but you know what? Not for many.
No, it's fascinating.
So
fascinating.
You know, my thing with one and done. Do you guys have strong feelings about players coming out of high school, or like, is there somewhere you want the players to go before they join the NBA?
I have my say, but I think...
Lithuania.
Hey, we're not going to talk about LaVar Ball. No, we're never going to talk about LaVar Ball on this podcast.
Right now,
please.
For all of you listening.
Oh my God.
No
LaVar Ball zone.
That's all I have to say.
Okay.
We're going to talk about Lonzo sometimes, though, right?
Yeah. Okay. No, because he is a basketball player and plays for a very popular team.
He also slandered Nas, stop.
Yeah.
What is the matter with you?
Okay.
Did you guys listen to Lonzo's album? Anybody?
No, I haven't.
Okay,
I
gotta give it a try.
ZO2
He's the opposite of Nas.
I'll bump it. I'll bump it on the TTC on my way home. Personally, for me, I realize there are many things wrong with NCAA, and we're not going to get into that. I personally am a fan of getting an education, but I think tying it directly to athletics has taken us to this very weird place. So if someone can go get money for their family or for their livelihood while also developing in their skill, then they are entitled to do any pathway they see is best for them. And I think having more options is better for people. Personally, as much as I love getting an education.
The NBA scouts, from my understanding, they want to see the kid perform at an elite level. Right, we can all agree on that. So is G League up to that level yet? Like, is G League competition up to the level where you can comfortably be like, you know, instead of going overseas, I don't know who it was. Was it Brandon Jennings that went overseas? And there was a couple of the players that went overseas and played. And NBA scouts can only see you in that way. But if NBA has a system where the league is competitive, the G League, players would wanna do that instead. So from what I've read, I think NBA scouts only have this argument where it's like, we want to see the player play outside of high school before we decide to invest in this guy.
I can see that. I still think it's different. Like the G League is a good league, but for me it's different just because, like, you know, watching hockey as well. When you go to Europe is always going to be a man's league. You know what I mean? There's going to be grown-ass men playing for their livelihood. They're in the same way as the G League, but it's just more physical. There's less stars. It's less cushy. And that there you can really see if the player has the intensity needed for the NBA.
Yeah, that's a good point because I feel like NBA is a very rigorous league. Like, people don't understand that there's only 400 jobs out there. It's very cutthroat. Mm-hmm. So these kids coming in take those veteran spots, right?
Yeah.
And NBA wants those veterans to be on teams because they teach these rookies a valuable lesson. So I feel like if the kids come in too quick, they're going to take all these spots from veterans that veterans don't really want. So NBA has to create this balance of like, hey, like, how do we move forward with this? Obviously, it's a hot topic amongst a lot of people, so they have to carefully tread on this, and they can't just immediately make a move that's going to make a shift in the entire league.
I would like to, you know, mention that the G League is definitely, there's some good, great talent in that league. If you look at the makeup of a lot of the NBA teams, people are getting drafted. People are, you know, building through the draft, but they're also building through players that, you know, are found in the G League. I'd like to see the stat line on Hassan Whiteside, the first game out of the G League. I think he had a triple-double with blocks. He, nobody knew who he was. suddenly got, you know, put into the Miami system.
Well, this was after he was waived from the Kings, right?
Yeah, he was on the Kings and he was waived.
He was playing in the D League.
And he was assigned to whatever their affiliate. Do they have an affiliate? I'm not sure.
Yeah, they have. They were the champions a year before the Raptors 9-5 were the champions.
You know what? I feel like there's a lot of developments happening in the NBA, and one of them has to be the two-way contracts, like you mentioned earlier. That helps a lot of teams with players that, you know, show enough promise that they can make an NBA roster, but yeah, they also have to prove themselves coming into a team with a set offensive system, a set, you know, future and set goals that they kind of have to fit themselves in.
No, for sure. You got to get your reps in. The Spurs are notorious for doing this, sending players down into the G League to run the same plays, but at a slower or at a quicker intensity than practice, but slower than game speed. But because, you know, it's common knowledge that NBA teams don't practice during the year.
Or the Cavs don't. Isaiah said that? Yeah. So is there anything that you guys would like to add when it comes to two-way contracts? Like, are you a fan? Do you think the 45-day span they have is enough for a player to showcase exactly what he's made of?
It's interesting. It's very progressive. And, you know, it could use some reform. But the fact that it's there is, you know, it shows the fact that the NBA is a progressive league. And
I also feel like the travel time should not be counted as 45 days. I feel like they should really give the players. Yes, it's counted. And you know what? That's the weird thing is that, you know, these guys sometimes travel 2 to 3 days because you're playing between the NBA and the G League. The schedules don't match. They don't have enough training time with either one of their teams to kind of make themselves fit in those systems, even though they're running the same system. I'm sure Jerry Stackhouse locally is running the same system that Casey wants, because, you know, he'll take a player and plug him in right into the roster with a seamless transition.
Yeah.
So I also feel like these players need to be given a chance because they've worked their butt off to get where they are. I mean, the G League struggles are real.
It's interesting because if we do have these two-way contracts that you're talking about, then, you know, we're going to run out of room. There's only so many places you can hide prospects.
That's very true. They have a lot of shortcomings.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're NBA ready, but at the same time, they're not.
Yeah.
Like, I also feel like, you know, the coaches, and certain coaches don't have tendency to play more than 8 players. We could talk about Thibodeau and...
Yeah.
Is it D'Antoni that never plays more than 7 guys? So these guys never play, unless like somebody's injured, there's never going to be an opportunity for these guys in certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Raptors are really good with it. And sorry to bring up the Raptors again, but, you know, I feel like our bench is deep for a reason because we have a good system in place. And the teams are going to look at this and go like, hey, guess what? We can do what the Spurs and the Raptors are doing.
Yeah, it's interesting we're talking about these G League players. I mean, they have a very, you know, next man up mentality, and you know, it's a topic we can discuss is next man up point guards. An interesting player would be someone like Tyus Jones.
Tyus Jones is a good pick.
Do you have any thoughts on Tyus?
Like, I think Thibodeau seems to be really, really fond of the guy. Like, he's cracking rotation.
Yeah, he's cracking. He's getting minutes in the notoriously shy with minutes.
I think he complements Jimmy Butler really well. Because Andrew Wiggins kind of checks out sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
On the defensive end, anyway. I'm a big fan, and I know he's a local guy, so there's always going to be a bias.
No, it's fine.
I also feel like Tyus Jones has an impact on that team. Plus and minus is a very, flawed stat. Like, I don't look at it, you know, for every argument I make. But I also feel like he's really up there when it comes to just, you know, when he's on the floor, he's making an impact. Getting the offensive sets going, bringing up the ball. Like, I feel like they have ball handlers. Like, but Jamal Crawford is on the second unit. And then you have Jimmy Butler, who plays on the defensive end a lot more than, you know, they would want him to, because he really is the only guy that would clamp down. I think Karl Anthony Towns hasn't shown up defensively.
Andrew Wiggins
hasn't. So
prospects haven't developed in that way.
So I think Thibodeau relies on Jimmy Butler to get them ready defensively and call everybody out. And Tyus Jones...
Even if he gets a tech for it.
That's very true. That was ridiculous, by the way. So I feel like Tyus Jones has earned that respect from Thibodeau, which is not the easiest thing to do. I'm glad they didn't bring on Derrick Rose. That would have been a disaster.
Well, yeah, Derrick Rose would be the opposite of what Tyus Jones.
Yeah, but they thought about it.
Well, yeah, because the Timberwolves are the Bulls reunion tour.
The Timberwolves, yeah. If you will.
So I think it's important to keep in mind for any of the guards we mentioned, because I have a couple that I can run off in a bit, but it's that Tyus Jones is not Jimmy Butler's like on the floor partner going forward over, you know, over whoever they have, right?
Jeff,
like,
Teague. He's playing better than Jeff Teague.
It's interesting with Tyus Jones. I mean, when he's on the floor, they outscore opponents a lot more. Oh. I mean, he's in one of the top net rating lineups in the NBA with at least 150 minutes played. The second best rated lineup is Tyus Jones, Jimmy Butler, Towns, Wiggins, and Gibson. And they have a 24.3 net rating.
Okay,
as a lineup.
And I can understand that, because even from the eye test, when Jeff Teague is on the floor, that whole dynamic is just strange. It gets into that there's only one ball kind of situation, and Jeff Teague is prone to just flubbing that before you even get into a set. But do you really? Yeah, this is like an important question. Do you really think Tyus Jones overtakes Jeff Teague in this rotation, or is this just like, because of egos, he kind of has to stay as he is?
He's undersized.
He is undersized, definitely. But they've played 259 minutes together as a lineup, and that's in the tops for, you know, most minutes played together as a lineup in the NBA as well.
I'm gonna put this out there: it's the regular season. Playoff rotations, Tyus Jones ain't cracking nothing.
Right?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And
you might disagree, and let me just, you know, validate my point.
Yeah, no.
I think it's
it.
Mainly because when you're going up against Russell Westbrook, Tyus Jones has no chance. Sure, he can, you know, they can hide him, but then again, who do they really have? What is Jeff Teague that good of a defender? Which he's not. I feel like the Timberwolves need an upgrade on the point guard position, which they don't have right now. So currently, Tyus Jones seems to be working. We still have to see what happens in the playoffs, because I think the Timberwolves can be one of those teams that's going to be hard out for anybody. So in order for them to win a couple games on the road, at least, they need to have a solid guy. And Tyus Jones seems to be, you know, proven it so far. But I still have to see what happens in the playoffs, because it's a different animal. Mm-hmm. But that's just my point. I have a lot of love for Tyus Jones. I advocate for him every time, because I think his numbers are real. Like, he's played enough minutes for us to see, like, he's legit. Do you have anybody else in mind for the guard position?
My favorite is T.J. McConnell, and I was really worried when they got Ben Simmons in the draft, just because he was gonna be their like magic, you know, going forward, like being the point forward and whatnot. But then, you know, in Grand Sixers tradition, you know, they don't play the rookie year, so T.J. McConnell got
as is tradition.
Yeah, as is tradition for the Sixers. Yeah, and then they got Fultz, and again in Grant's Sixers tradition, he's a
redshirt rookie.
Yeah, he's not playing. So T.J. McConnell has sort of blossomed into this sometimes starting, sometimes not starting point guard who really keeps the Sixers' composure on the floor. And I know they brought in J.J. Redick to sort of take more of that leadership role in terms of tempering the Sixers, who were very prone at blowing leads this year, famously in London against the Celtics. But I think when you watch them, as far as the eye tests go, I don't have his numbers, but you know, it's about 2 years worth of material now that I can base this off of. As far as eye test goes, he keeps them going, which is hard for a team that for a long time people thought of as a team that just gave up on possessions.
Yeah, he puts it all on the line. He's a hustle player. I agree. T.J. McConnell is a great backup point guard who can fill in for a starting role if given the chance.
I'm not going to bash T.J. McConnell in any way, because I feel like he can pass and he can shoot, which is more than Ben Simmons can do. What I've seen from T.J. McConnell, it's been all about making the right plays. He's made the right plays. He's put the team in a position where D. JJ can come off the screens and Embiid can get his touches, and he pretty much makes everybody happy, which is what Philly needs. Philly needs, you know, because the crowd goes gets really behind you. The people are really passionate, and when Philly gets going, they can run up the score up to like 15 within three minutes. They'll come up to a 20 lead, and I'm like, man, Philly's blowing people out sometimes. Yeah. And to me, that's because of TJ McConnell. Even though Ben Simmons is a great, I think he's a generational talent. I believe that if he ever develops a jumper, I think he's unstoppable because of his length. He reminds me of LeBron in some way, and I know that's a very sacred comparison. I'm not supposed to do it, but man, the guy can really see the floor. Mm-hmm. So if TJ McConnell can do the backup job really well and not demand a lot of money, which I think he will, he'd be in that Dellavedova camp where he's going to want like $30 million for 3 years, and Philly's going to be like, nuh-uh, we have Jared Bayless.
Well, yeah, that's the thing with TJ is that they clearly, you know, for what it's worth, the process to me is done. Brian Colangelo is running the show there.
Is he running anything?
Yeah, sorry, it's different. It's not the same mentality. It's a different front office. With that in mind, they have Markelle Fultz. He's in Grand Sixers tradition, will play next year. They're going to figure out what's going
on. Who's Markelle Fultz? I forgot about that.
Yeah, I think he was in
some guy's jumper didn't show up.
Oh, yeah. The whole team seems to be distancing themselves from the guy. Like, nobody wants to talk about him. Nobody wants to say anything.
That's a classic.
Classic Philly move?
No, it's a classic. To me, it reeks of a classic Toronto front office move, like the old ways.
Toronto shots.
Yeah, this is like a classic like Maple Leafs thing to do, a classic old Raptors thing to do. You just like put them on the bus and let them figure it out. Oh.
I feel like people are still sore about Brian Colangelo in Toronto.
He made his move.
Is it because he drafted Bargnani? God, Bargnani was awful. No, I totally understand your point. I think Philly would be much better if they let TJ McConnell run the point a little bit more.
Yeah, but he will be... What I was trying to say is that he will be... I can see a future without him on that team, as much as that makes me sad.
I feel like, you know, for me, the next man up would have to be... I got to give Washington some love here. Satoransky is really decent, man.
Yeah, that's fun.
Satoransky's been... Yeah, like John Wall... I feel like Satoransky is one really good performance away from going on Twitter and saying, like, great team win, guys.
Bradley Beal gets team the in most quotations. Spoon-fed baskets ever.
Gortat's going to like it and retweet it or whatever.
I don't know if he has a big enough ego to start taking shots at John Wall. We'll see.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, but NBA egos are always bigger than you think they are.
Yeah.
But I also feel like, with, you know, on a serious note, Satoransky's been solid. Mm-hmm. I feel like Bradley Beal kind of, you know, hogs the spotlight a little bit. But I also feel like Bradley Beal needs to. But at the same time, I watch Washington play without Wall, and it's been a lot of ball movement. It's been a lot of like, hey, if you're open, take the shot.
Yeah, but Satoransky's numbers haven't quite caught up yet.
No, they haven't.
Like, he's been putting up numbers now, but his averages when I was looking it up, they're still low, right? Like,
well, that's because of John Wall being on the team, right? Not many minutes for Satoransky.
Yeah.
How about over the last seven?
Yeah, could you give me that?
Or? Last seven stats, 35 minutes per game, 17 points, 8.5 assists, 3.5 rebounds. Averaging, you know, a steal and a 1.5 blocks per game. But that's last seven, you know, if we wanted to give it a bigger sample size. Last 15, 12.6 points, 28 minutes, close to 6 assists.
I also feel like with the eye test that I watched Satoransky, he's done the right things. He's played formidable defense. He gets people like Otto Porter and Kelly Oubre involved, which is something you need to do for these guys to get going.
Yeah.
Because if they have a slow game to start off, they're not going to pick it up.
Okay, so before we close the book on Satoransky, do you think, because I know we discussed this at one point before, do you think they get rid of any of these mammoth Washington contracts to try and...
Ooh, contract talk. That's so attractive. Interesting. You know, they're over $80 million and tied up with these four guys. And, you know, I forgot to mention Jan Mahimi, who's making a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah.
Bradley Beal's 23. John Wall's making 18, which is exponentially going to rise over the course of, like, 4 years. So we have all these guys making a ton of money, and Washington is kind of tied up.
Yeah.
And they can't really go anywhere.
Because they're shallow. We've all seen now, they're a pretty shallow team. So do you think they... Do you think they try and get rid of one of them and then hold on to him, like Saturansky?
So who are we? Who's the token guy in this? Kevin, you think Jan Mahimi is the one?
I don't know. I called personally the other day. Isaiah Thomas getting shipped.
Okay.
I'm gonna go on record and just say, one of these days, I think John Wall is gonna get shipped.
Oh, that's really? Very clairvoyant.
Whoa, that's
clairvoyant.
I can't. I don't have a good read on Washington, so I'm gonna have to.
I don't think Washington has a good read on Washington, but you know, I just think somebody, you know, something's got to change, and one of those two, Beal or Wall, is I think gonna get split up.
I think Gortat leaves.
I agree with that.
Gortat's definitely gonna leave
because he started this stuff, man. Gortat, why are you starting?
He wants to go to Orlando.
Marcin, why would anybody want to go to Orlando except the weather and Disney? Is it Disneyland or Disney World?
I've been to Orlando a couple times. It's not worth going to.
Okay, so
sorry, Orlando.
So in light,
sorry, Orlando.
In light of the wonderful All-Star festivities this weekend, LA crowd in the arena notwithstanding, the NBA is ascending in terms of popularity, in terms of viewership. So what do you think it takes for the NBA at this point to surpass the MLB and the NFL?
It's interesting. What does it take?
Yeah,
I think
what do you
maybe
think?
Maybe just one more star that comes out of nowhere that takes the league by storm. I mean, how long has it been since we've had a guy like LeBron come into the league? 14 years ago, specifically. I mean, we've had AD and generational talent like that, but I think we need another guy like
that. I disagree with that. Globalization of the game.
Okay. This is interesting. This is something I believe strongly in, and I want to
take it more places, man.
Take it more places.
Who cares about how many miles Kyrie is traveling? I don't care about how many miles he's racking up. They can take a week off in the middle, like Celtics did, even though people are saying the Celtics haven't been the same since they took that London trip. Which country do you think that the NBA can expand to that would help them with the growth?
Well, clearly they've already started. They've already started work with China. I don't think we're ever going to get to the point of having. I don't think we're at the point yet of having another team in another country like the Raptors are, like in this sort of weird, you know, outside of the United States team.
Are we not moving the team back to Vancouver? No chance of that happening.
The Grizzlies?
No.
Well, you'd have to ask the very stubborn Grizzlies ownership if they're going to move anything.
If anything's ever going to move, it's going to go to Seattle. We can all agree on that, right?
Yeah, that's going. Okay. That's going back first. But I think they've made overtures. They've made overtures to China in terms of marketing their stars. You know, Clay famously has Anta as his brand. You know, it's
China clay.
Yeah,
China clay is better than regular clay.
Yeah,
and with scaffolding clay.
What about Clay's toaster?
Clay's toaster. God,
there's a whole religion based on Clay Thompson, by the way.
Yeah, there is.
Clay theism is real.
It's scary. yeah, I think they expand to China, but what I really would like them to do is like. If you've ever seen footage of a EuroLeague game, like the way the crowd is there in there, it's like, you like if you think claytheism is a religious experience, watching basketball in like Greece, like
it's
like, I can't even. It's breathtaking.
Now you know on that topic, NBA plans to put a G League franchise in Mexico City, so that's I think the most realistic outside of. Of Canada and the United States team that could happen.
Is that an affiliate for some like NBA franchise or is that
in the G League?
It might be the Suns team, which is weird.
The closest to Mexico City.
Yeah, even though the Suns are their own G League team.
Oh, no. You know what? I won't stand for the Suns thing. Come on, why are you beating down on somebody who's already like
oh my God.
On the ground?
It's true. Well,
Yeah, so your point being, we need to, like, I think globalization is a really good thing, and they've been more active about it. They've been playing in China, and, you know, I feel like those countries that are overpopulated, like India and China, are really good markets for basketball. India still has not been, you know, penetrated yet, even though Garnett, I mean, they go there.
KD was doing work in India.
He's starting up some basketball.
No, but I'm talking about playing an NBA game in one of those places.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, it would be fantastic because there's so many people. And I think it's more of a soccer / cricket-driven country where you could have a game like, you know, basketball, like, kind of creep in there a little bit.
Yeah, I think the on-court product is better than it's ever been. You know, obviously people have their own tastes of whether or not the game has gone soft or whatever, but the game is fun to watch. It's pleasing to watch, even if they're clearly, like, not trying for half of it, like was the case in the All-Star in the past. But, but you know, I think we're all in agreement now that the NBA, if it wants to move forward as the sport, needs to go global like soccer has, or like, you know, yeah, pretty much soccer is the currently, to me, the global sport.
You know, coming out of the All-Star break, there's a few, you know, we've had, what, 2/3 of the season go by. I think it's a good time to maybe talk about the Coach of the Year discussion.
Sure. Dwayne Casey is 1-0 playing with LeBron James.
Dwayne Casey, there's a strong case for Casey, that's for sure.
How dare you not give any minutes to LaMarcus Aldridge, man? Like, the dude's a, what, 8-time All-Star? 7-time
He was picked
All-Star?
Last.
Okay, you know what? Yeah, bad enough as it is, give him some minutes.
I'm pretty sure Dwayne Casey just didn't play dudes who got in the fights with the Raptors.
I think he did play him.
Because he took a meeting with the Raptors and he never came, okay.
But right. I think he also played him, and then Pop might have given him a look and told him, get my guy off the floor kind of look.
Here we go. Coach of the year. My pick was Eric Spoelstra, but the Heat have, like, lost too many close games, so I don't know where they are now.
Filipino bias.
Yeah, it is Filipino bias.
Yep.
Which is why Jordan Clarkson is the second coming of Pippen.
Those celebrations with LeBron.
Yeah.
Seems like they've known each other for 15 years.
They know each other.
Take it easy, Jordan.
To bronze Jordan.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, the Spoelstra, as wonderful a job as he has done with these, like, sort of tertiary players, now he has Wade back, and it's a different show. Hopefully they'll win a few more games, but, you know, I'm, as far as my pick is right now, they're out to sea. Miami needs to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Miami, Spoelstra is always kind of a dark horse for Coach of the Year. I think this year, you know, in order to really understand the Coach of the Year discussion, we have to, you know, break it down as to, you know, what really makes a coach a good coach. You know, it's got to be quantifiable in a way where, you know, in my opinion, I think it's what kind of expectations did you have coming into the year? And, you know, what did you do to, you know, exceed or excel past those expectations? And, you know, given that criteria, I think Dwayne Casey, there's a strong case for Casey.
Okay, so what? Just so that we're not, you know, rambling on and on about each coach individually, let's hit on those points. So what were Dwayne Casey's expectations going into the year with the, like, terrifying culture reset hanging over his
head? I can pull up the image here, and we can always post it to our Twitter later. But NBA on ESPN has released something prior to the year saying, you know, the Raptors are supposed to be 6 seed coming out of
the
East.
Oh, this is the projected wins list.
Projected wins, 43 wins. Going into the All-Star break, the Raptors are now boasting a record of 41 wins and 16 losses.
I want to know who's higher than the Raptors on that list.
Charlotte, the super
team. Kemba and Dwight.
Kemba, Batum, and Dwight. So
yeah, former future Raptor Nick Batum.
We're not dreaming about him coming. That contract is gone.
Yeah, that dream is over.
So you're legitimate on Casey train.
So basically, you know, he's turned this. There was a lot of question marks going into the year. You know, will Kyle Lowry resign? Will Dwayne Casey stay the head coach? People were calling for his head. He's turned that around. He's, you know, he talked to DeMar, Kyle, told him to take, you know, a kind of a different approach to the year. You know, seeing DeMar DeRozan shooting three-pointers now, it's, you're not worried that it'll be a long two or a miss. You know, there's Kyle Lowry. He was second in the league in minutes played last year, or minutes per game, and this year he doesn't even crack the top 50. You know, he's great at player developing. The Toronto Raptors weren't supposed to have a bench, you know, after losing Patrick Patterson and Corey Joseph. And now the Raptors have the number one bench in the NBA. I think you got to give credit where credit is due. And Dwayne Casey's definitely proven himself this year.
Okay.
It's hard to disagree with that, don't you think?
It is
like,
hard
if you're sitting in the first seed, how do I disagree with that? But you know what? I'm going to play devil's advocate again and say Brad Stevens. And here's why. Let me just start out by saying that Messiah came to Casey said, we need to change the system.
Yeah, it wasn't Casey's decision.
And I give Casey all the credit in the world because he's been like, okay, fine. I will change my entire philosophy. Second of all, Brad Stevens' plays are known in the league at this point. Like, everybody knows that he's going to be creative. Last year when they were playing the All-Star game, even LeBron said that, you know, I see the game five plays before it happened. And he was saying that Brad Stevens was out coaching LeBron in this weird way where LeBron was like, I can't even see him calling the plays that he's calling. So the inbound plays, I've seen, like, and it's weird.
Gorgeous.
They're
gorgeous.
I have this weird obsession with, like, going back and seeing the inbound plays for, not to get too geeky on this.
No, it's fine.
Not so geeky podcast. But, you know, the rim running on the inbound plays, it's amazing. And even if that play doesn't work, he sets two off-ball screens where that the same guy that was running would come off the screen and hit an open jumper. Like, that's insane. Terry Rozier on that one game winner, like, that was an insane play. And was it White Mamba? I think it was White Mamba. Scalabrine called that play,
yeah,
knowing that Brad Stevens runs those plays. Because Scalabrine used to be an assistant coach, and he scouted Brad Stevens, so he knows the sets he's running. And they're just incredible to me. I feel like the team performing and not performing is another question, because obviously the argument is, well, why is Boston so bad offensively if he's such a good coach?
Mm-hmm.
If he's running all these sets, then why are they bad? It's mainly because the rookies have hit a wall. Gordon Hayward is not, like, we can't forget that Gordon Hayward is not there.
And also, not to jump on his train, but also the game isn't called in terms of just single play calling every possession anymore.
That's very true.
It's more flow offense. It's more let Kyrie initiate what he feels is the best choice on offense.
But, I mean, Kyrie thinks he can take anybody on.
Yeah.
And that's the confidence you need in players. I also feel like the offensive deficiencies are because of these players taking a back seat from where they started. They started on a 16-game winning streak.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people say maybe they took the trip, they came back, they were, you know, lenient with their system, and they're like, well, you know what, we've been winning, so they've been a little lackadaisical from that point.
It happens.
But I don't know what it exactly is, but whenever I watch him coach, I always feel like he's outsmarting opponents in some way. So maybe the players are not executing what he wants them to. I don't know what it is, but I cannot disagree with Casey, but I can also disagree with Casey.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird limbo I'm in right now.
Okay, and then the other number one seed as of now is the man with three names, Mike D'Antoni, for the Houston Rockets.
Can you give him again Coach of the Year? Was he the Coach of the Year last year? He was, right?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard.
Has anybody done that twice?
It's never been done before.
It's never been done before, but he's... Again, everyone loves to say there can only be one ball. But they have integrated Chris Paul and James Harden together, and it is working, and they're making up for each other's deficiencies, and they are the one seed right now.
They run off ball screens for both of those guys. It's unreal the way they play.
Mm-hmm.
Clint Capella is an awesome dude. Like, I've loved his game, and that's coming from a guy that hates the Houston Rockets.
Yeah,
like, I will openly say this.
Yeah, for sure.
But I love watching them play. They're so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot deny that. I mean, the 7-second thing in Phoenix resonates with D'Antoni. But I also feel like the personnel he has now, no disrespect, Sean Marion, are way better in executing what he wants to run.
For sure.
Trevor Ariza, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, PJ Tucker. Luke Mbamute. Like, you have so many 3-and-D guys. Like, how do you stop? And legitimately, if they give Golden State Warriors a run, I would not be surprised. I would not be shocked.
I really think they can.
And maybe I'm too early on this bandwagon here. People have been talking about, like, could it be Houston? But at the same time, you never, never, ever bet against the Warriors.
I think for me, just to close the topic on this, is that the strike against Coach D'Antoni is that he's not a defensive coach, and that's fine. So what the front, again, the expectations for him going in this year is, can you integrate Chris Paul? And can you improve defensively? So obviously the personnel changed. They got more 3-and-D guys who could actually bring defense. And so now I don't know where they are ranked defensively.
I think they're up there.
Yeah, but it is enough now that you can't just simply sit on your heels and say, oh, but they're not a defensive team. They're at a point where defensively you can just be fine with it, and you can just start to appreciate, like with Brad Stevens' timeouts, you can start to appreciate the genius that it takes to, like, craft, you know, offense that, if you really think about it on paper, is fairly simple. Just threes and just layups. But it works.
I agree. I think Houston's done a great job this year of implementing. And you know what? The most important thing for these guys is that, even with Casey, getting the right roster in place. That is so important for these people. I feel like D'Antoni didn't have that last year. He was halfway there. Yeah. But you can see it this year. Like, people have stepped up. They've put these pieces together. Morey is... I think some credit goes to him, too. I mean, people like to bash on him a lot. But I feel like he's done a great job when it comes to just getting the right personnel defensively, in your point. Because he's not known to be a defensive coach, but they've made an effort to put these guys in place, like Trevor Ariza, Luke Mbamute, PJ Tucker, who have enough experience to go, like, hey, I know how to play defense, even though my coach is not really a specialist in that department.
Yeah, I feel like we may need to revisit this another time, but depending how the next few weeks go, we may need to visit Utah.
Quinn Snyder, man, that was my dark horse.
Yeah,
he's doing an excellent
job. Again, a defensive mind.
Yeah.
I feel like these defensive coaches are really climbing the ladder.
Well, it's because, you know, your transcendent or your great players will get you buckets. It's whether or not you can, you know, it's whether or not you throw that effort away defensively. You know what
right,
I mean?
You got to set good structure and have good, you know, defensive schemes for them to execute, you know.
But case for Casey, though.
A case for Casey.
Yeah, but secretly case for Casey. Yeah, it's all...
it's not a secret.
These Canadians are taking over.
All right, everybody. That's it for today's Back to the Basket. Just want you all to know that we may have our backs to the basket, but we never turn our backs on our fans. So feel free to check the show notes and follow us on Twitter and send us questions about anything related to the NBA or pop culture. Yeah, and that'll be it. That's a wrap.